This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The abduction happened in Chakama village in the southeast of Kenya, Malindi district. Five people, including three children, were wounded and taken to hospital.
That's reporter Raya Lambor reporting on the kidnapping incident in Kenya. Details next.
Also, Cameroon's military says it has freed nine students who were kidnapped this week from the country's English-speaking regions. And former South African First Lady Graca Machel says the role of women and youths in African politics, she sees it as a sign of transformational change taking root on the continent.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, several gunmen shot five people and kidnapped an Italian aid worker in Kenya today. Witnesses said at least three children were injured in the attack in a business area in Malindi and Kilifi County on the coast. The men snatched 23-year-old Silvia Constanza Romana, who was in Kenya, volunteering for an Italian aid group. Reporter Ryle Lambor and cameraman Amos Wangwa went to the scene for VOA shortly after the attack. Ryle has a report for us.
A group of unidentified gunmen, four in number, abducted an Italian woman working for an aid organization in Kenya. The abduction happened in Chakama village in the southeast of Kenya, Malindi district. Five people, including three children, were wounded and taken to hospital. The reason for the attack and the identity of the attackers has not yet been established. The organization the Italian volunteer was working for posted a short statement on its website saying there were no words to comment on what was happening. According to an eyewitness who also happens to be the village chief, Albert Chome, the attack at the village in Malindi district happened at around 7:30 p.m. Chome says the attackers were four in number and one of them had actually lived in the community there for 3 days before the attack. He had rented a house at the town, Chamaka Guest House. Chome says the gunman walked in and slapped the Italian volunteer, who at some time was trying to resist. They then picked her up and fled with her on foot. There are no whereabouts on the Italian woman who was abducted, but police say they're in pursuit of the abductors. The area the abduction took place, Chakama, neighbors River Sabaki, and locals believe that the abductees must have crossed the river into neighboring town known as Kararacha, which neighbors Tana River and Garissa counties that share a common border with Somalia. So far, no one has claimed the attack. The last time such an attack happened in the area is 10 years ago, so residents and locals are still baffled at this latest incident. Malindi is in the coast of Kenya, and tourism is the major economic activity earner in the region. Locals are saying that if this incident is not handled well, it may have a negative impact on the area, at least economically.
That was journalist Raya Lambor, who has just come from the scene in Kenya's Kilifi County, where gunmen shot at least five people, including children, and kidnapped an aid worker.
Cameroon's military says it has freed nine students who were kidnapped this week from a school in one of the country's restive English-speaking regions. It is the third time students have been abducted from schools in the Anglophone region this month. Moki Edwin Kinzaka reports from Yaoundé.
Senior Divisional Officer Tun Dung Chamberlain says the military killed several gunmen Wednesday in an operation that freed nine kidnapped students and their teacher. He says other armed men responsible for the abduction are on the run.
Nine guns have been seized, four neutralized, among them the head of the team called Manawlox, and three bikes destroyed, and even the camp has also been burned down by the forces of law and order.
Chamberlain says the teacher was wounded in the rescue. Gunmen kidnapped the students and their teacher Tuesday evening from Lord's Bilingual School in Kumba, a city in Cameroon's southwest region. The kidnapping comes 3 weeks after gunmen kidnapped and then released 79 students and 3 staff from a school in the neighboring Northwest region. 11 students were later kidnapped from the same Presbyterian secondary school. Church moderator Funky Samuel said a $4,000 ransom was paid to the abductors for their release. Pierre-Marie Abbé is a political analyst at the Catholic University of Central Africa. He says the government's war against the separatists has been a failure.
Il faut un dialogue spécifique d'abord. Qui résout le problème anglophone de manière spécifique,
he says the government should drop the idea of war and organize dialogue with English-speaking Cameroonians. But for such a dialogue to be successful, says Abbé, the government should meet anglophone Cameroonians to find out from them who they see as their true leaders. The government says separatists in the 2 English-speaking regions have torched at least 100 schools and abducted or killed dozens of teachers. More than 90% of the region's schools remain closed. The international community and rights groups have condemned violence from both sides and called on the government to negotiate an end to the crisis. Allegra Maria Del Pilar Beaoshi is the UN resident coordinator for Cameroon.
The UN has, and along with most of the international communities, has asked for dialogue. We need to hear the voice of the people saying we've had enough and we want solutions. It shouldn't only be the UN saying it or the ambassadors. We need confidence-building measures. And I think we need the peace.
Unrest broke out in Cameroon's western regions in 2016 when English-speaking teachers and lawyers protested the dominance of French speakers. Cameroon's military reacted with a crackdown, and armed separatists soon launched a campaign for independence. Clashes since have killed more than 1,200 people. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Africa's political history has centered on strongman rule by men who cling to power for decades, but recently women have been taking more cabinet and parliament positions, putting themselves in positions as engines of change. And on the streets, disenfranchised youths have staged protests that clearly have shaken the towers of power with their growing numbers. Graça Machel, widow of South African President Nelson Mandela and Mozambican President Samora Machel, sees the two groups' growing clout as a sign of transformational change taking root on the continent. Long known for her advocacy of women's and children's rights, she heads the Graça Machel Trust with a goal of nurturing those roots. She spoke with my colleague, Paul Alexander, about how the change can be contagious.
In recent times, you have the case of Rwanda, where it's not only the number of women who have been engaged in public life, any of public life, actually. It's not only government, it's also parliament, it is the judiciary, and even in the economic sphere. You see that the participation of people, and particularly of women, has been the best in the world, if you can compare it with many even developed worlds. And recently, you have the case of Ethiopia, which has surprised everybody, bringing 50% of cabinet, electing a woman president, appointing a chief justice who are a woman, but filtering even into the cabinet to give portfolios of extreme importance for the transformation of the country, like defense in the hands of a woman, and the issues which are of particular importance for Ethiopia, which is peace internally and peace with neighbors.
So do you think there is a likelihood that other countries will follow in those footsteps of Ethiopia and Rwanda?
I believe so. Whenever you have a sort of a status quo, when you get good examples then the trend is that other governments will begin to emulate, and this is the hope. Let me give you another example. For instance, Senegal has also very high levels of participation of women, and I would say that I hope also that the representation of young people will be increasingly filtering into these public spaces. Generally speaking, we would say our governments and our parliaments are too old. If you are to compare, that the majority of the population on the continent are young. So that's another transformative trend which has to take place, I hope, as soon as possible. We have a few countries which are going for elections next year. Hopefully, they will bring a significant percentage of women and of young people into public life.
So
on the economy, actually, I think there is trends which are not highly visible, but they are taking place. The young people have been very much engaged in entrepreneurship. They are very creative, but we don't have statistics in place to say what is the percentage, while we have to compare, for instance, with unemployment. Women as well, my own organization is working with women and developing their entrepreneurship, helping them to get access to capital, etc. In like us, there are many other organizations who are doing this, but we don't have data to present. And because of that, we continue to make those bland statements that they are marginalized. Yes, there is marginalization, but at the same time, there's a trend of transformation from the side of women and young people, which is not being told because there's no call information to sustain the affirmation.
That was Graca Machel, widow of South African President Nelson Mandela, speaking with VOA's Paul Alexander. We'll bring all of Paul's conversation with her to you over the next 2 days. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib. 18 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Several gunmen kidnapped an Italian aid worker in Kenya today and shot five people, including at least three children. Cameroon's military says it has freed nine students who were kidnapped this week from the country's restive English-speaking regions. And former South African First Lady Graca Machel sees the role of women and youths in African politics as a sign of transformational change taking root on the continent. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
During apartheid in South Africa, the white authorities granted enclaves of land to the chiefs of ethnic groups across the country. The idea was to further divide the country along racial lines. Today, tribal councils maintain their hold on the communal areas, and residents lease land from them. Now, as South Africa moves uncertainly toward land reform, there are calls for this system to be scrapped. Darren Taylor tells us more in the third part of our series on land restitution in South Africa.
More than 20 million South Africans live in communal regions where they don't have individual land rights. Generations of smallhold farmers have worked the land without ever owning a patch of soil. Their tribal councils are the recognized owners of the communal territories, and the chiefs can kick farmers off their plots at any time. Land reform expert Professor Ruth Hall says this makes it nearly impossible for farmers to succeed.
These are the sites of the greatest deprivation in terms of access to resources and services and livelihoods in the country. And we have nearly 30% of our population living in these areas without secure rights.
Gloria Serobe represents one of the few success stories from the communal lands. Her farms produce maize and soya beans in Eastern Cape Province. Serobe negotiated with 45 tribal headmen for more than 5 years for access to the 2,000 hectares she needed to build her business, but she still doesn't own the land.
The poverty and unemployment in the rural communal areas is wrapped around the fact of the land being rural and communal with no security of tenure. So we cannot talk economic transformation of these areas without solving this little matter of security of tenure.
Banks won't lend to farmers on communal lands, and the government won't subsidize them because they don't hold land titles. Serobe points out that the Eastern Cape has one of the highest levels of hunger in South Africa, yet she notes it has vast tracts of fertile ground.
This land is for the most part lying dormant and unutilized. If properly farmed, the region has the potential to be one of South Africa's breadbaskets.
But traditional leaders refuse to lease more than 1.5 hectares per family, and the families can't afford seed or equipment. Serobe says every step toward commercial agriculture in the communal regions will be pioneering, since large-scale farming has never happened there. Rural development specialists like Rory Alcock have long noticed the promise that the communal lands hold. He works with about 20,000 farmers in KwaZulu-Natal province. Alcock says they sold goats worth $30 million in the last December and January holiday period.
The market is about 4.5 billion rands worth goats that are sold in this country out of the formal system. And in the communal herds, there's 7.5 billion rand that are sitting there. People have goats already. You don't need to go and give them goats. It's to make the system work better. There's a huge value chain around leather, meat, that no one has even started touching.
Earlier this year, the government held listening sessions around the country with communities and groups that have stakes in the issue. Farmers, academics, politicians, and business leaders sat together to find ways around the obstacles to land reform. But the government still has not offered its plan on how to proceed or a schedule. Alcock's and Sorobe's advice to the government's team working on land reform is: before you start taking white farmers' land, start investing in agriculture in the neglected tribal districts, and as a first step, allow the people in the communal areas to own their farms. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Uncertainty about the potential benefits of the African Continental Free Trade Area, trading tensions in Africa, and tensions among African countries continue to slow the ratification of the trade deal. This week, senior government officials, trade experts, and business representatives from 14 Eastern African countries are meeting in Rwanda's capital to discuss ways to move the trade pact forward. Eugene Uimana has more details from Kigali.
The African Union says 12 nations, Cote d'Ivoire, Kenya, Guinea, Rwanda, Ghana, Mali, Niger, Chad, Sierra Leone, South Africa, Switzerland, and Uganda have ratified the agreement to establish the single continental market. 10 more ratifications are needed for the AFCFTA to come into force and make Africa the largest free trade area in terms of the number of participating countries since the formation of the World Trade Organization. Giovanni Biha, Deputy Executive Secretary of UN Economic Commission for Africa, says that some countries are putting off ratification.
Like smaller countries that still have, let's say, some fears in terms of the benefits that they will have with the Continental Free Trade Area.
She also said there are signs of rising trading tensions among African countries which also delayed ratification. Bihar was among the officials gathered in Kigali for the meeting of the Intergovernmental Committee of Experts of the Sub-Regional Office for Eastern Africa to debate ways to advocate for the AfCFTA agreement. Katia Kasaija is Uganda's Minister of Finance, Planning and Economic Development. He says that some countries are defending their own positions instead of regional positions, which also slows ratification.
We are not fully integrated. When we go to negotiate as brothers and sisters, many people, they are not talking as East African, they are talking as Rwandans, they are talking as Ugandans, they are talking as Kenyans, they are talking as Burundians, they are talking as Tanzanians.
Only two East African states have ratified their agreement. Some delegates at the meeting note the part of the problem is that diplomatic tensions among some nations, such as Burundi, Rwanda, and Uganda, get in the way of trade unity. Since it was signed in March, 49 out of 54 African countries have signed the AfCFTA agreement. The African Union says the agreement could create a market over 1.2 billion people with a gross domestic product of $2.5 trillion. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And thanks for choosing the VOA.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, new Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed is pushing through reforms, including tackling economic mismanagement, fighting corruption, and human rights abuses. An in-depth discussion on Ethiopia's new era on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.